Support for this podcast comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads. On view now. Find out more about the exhibition at PEM.org.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Throw physic to the dogs, wrote William Shakespeare. I'll none of it. But when it comes to physic, physicians, doctors, hospitals, emergency rooms, Americans can't get enough of it in TV drama. After a big 15-year run, ER ended last night. Final episode. But Grey's Anatomy and House go on, and before them, a chain of hospital dramas stretching back into the mists of TV time. This hour, On Point, we'll look at the long grip of the hospital drama on the American imagination. You can join the conversation. Westerns are gone. Hospital dramas are not. Not at all. Why? Yes, there's life and death, but why are we drawn to those in a hospital? And will you miss ER? In a moment, we'll hear from two doctors on the end of ER and its impact on viewers and on medicine. But joining me first from Los Angeles is Brian Lowry, chief TV critic for Variety magazine. Brian, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
15 years, off goes ER. People are saying it's the end of big TV dramas that everybody watches. Do you agree?
Well, not entirely. ER premiered 15 years is a really long time, and ER has been around long enough to watch the television business change dramatically over that period. So, the kind of numbers that ER put up in its early days when it was a major hit and it was attracting, 30, 35, sometimes 40% of the audience on a single night, I think that's over. I just think that there's the viewing landscape is too fragmented and diffused right now. But, dramas are here to stay. They're just staying in a slightly different form.
Let's listen back to just a little bit 15 years ago to the pilot episode of ER. I want to get your view on what makes these hospital shows so attractive. But here it is, September 19th, 1994. Here's a little exchange between John Carter, played by Noah Wiley. He's getting some advice here from chief resident Mark Green, played by Anthony Edwards.
I thought I was going to be sick. I'm sorry.
Don't ever say you're sorry. See, there's two kinds of doctors. There's the kind that gets rid of their feelings and the kind that keeps them. If you're going to keep your feelings, you're going to get sick from time to time. That's just how it works. People come in here and they're sick, dying, and bleeding, and they need our help. And helping them is more important than how we feel. But it's still a pain in the ass sometimes. Sometimes I just want to quit and do something else.
The pilot of ER in September 1994 and then 15 years. It was hardly the first hospital show, Brian, but it was said to break ground on a lot of fronts, and it seemed proof once again that hospital dramas just roll and roll in this TV culture of ours.
Well, I think there are a couple of things that work there. When you talk to network television executives, one of the things that you always hear them say when they're talking about developing a new show is, how do we raise the stakes? And life and death is something that's a daily occurrence in only a few workplaces. It's why you see a lot of cop shows and you see a lot of medical shows. If you do a show about architects and they mess up at work, it's not necessarily going to have the immediate consequences of what happens if a doctor does. And I think also in the case of ER particularly, but you see it in Grey's Anatomy and House as well, there's a certain fantasy about having the people in those white coats really having your best interest at heart. The sales pitch on ER, and John Wells, who was the producer of the show, has talked about this, was if you or your loved one is in an ambulance and the doors open and they're taken to the hospital, these are the people that you want to take care of you. Not that they're not without personal problems, and if anything, the fact that they have those even makes them more heroic. But that they genuinely care about what happens. You know, no one immediately starts asking you how you're going to pay for this.
When you look back, Brian, all the way to Dr. Kildare and Marcus Welby, M.D., and you know, there were St. Elsewhere and Chicago Hope, of course, around the same time as ER, and now ER's gone, but Grey's Anatomy, House go on. What kind of evolution do you see in what's offered in hospital drama and what American viewers seem to expect or want?
Well, I think you know, obviously things have become more realistic, certainly in the depiction of surgeries and, you know, seeing blood and gore and getting a sense of what you have to put up with if you're going to work in a hospital. But I think the other thing that happened, and, you know, I think we saw this with MASH in the 1970s, and then it really took hold in the 80s and 90s, is workplace shows become more about the workplace than the individual characters. You know, the hospital at ER, the reason the show was able to run for 15 years is because actors could come and go, and the hospital really became the star of the show. And you see that, you know, House is not that way. But most of the workplace shows that really took hold and had long runs, like NYPD Blue and ER, were shows where it was about the precinct or about the hospital, and characters could come and go.
And what does it mean, Brian, that Jay Leno will now sit in this slot on NBC 5 nights a week instead of a ER or a drama like ER?
That is really an end of an era, and I think it's something that a lot of people out here are looking at. You know, if they're in the production community, they're looking at and saying, "Wow, those were 5 hours on one of the major networks that were mostly reserved for dramas. I mean, with maybe a news magazine thrown in, and now NBC is basically saying that's too expensive. We're going to put on a talk show to save money." And I really do think it's, you know, this is a decision that NBC made that they probably wouldn't have made even a year or two ago. It's a sign that the network's fortunes, just as ER sort of cooled down and wasn't the huge hit it was, NBC has gone through its own problems during the last 5 to 8 years. And the network reached a point of desperation where this actually seemed like a good idea.
So in comes Jay Leno at much lower cost to NBC. Out goes not just ER, but the whole idea of a big drama, network drama, that tens of millions might sit down and watch.
Well, you know, they'll still obviously be programming dramatic programs at 9 p.m., but what they've done is they have blunted their potential losses, because the Leno show will be relatively inexpensive to produce, and it'll be there 5 nights a week. But they've also blunted their potential upside. And the possibility of putting on a show that catches the public's imagination in the way that ER did and runs and generates a huge audience and helps local newscasts and does all the things that ER did, you know, makes a huge amount of money for Warner Brothers, which produces the show, all of that goes out the window.
Brian Lowry, Chief TV Critic for Variety Magazine. Thank you very much for being with us, Brian.
Thank you.
We're talking this hour about the very long grip of the hospital drama on the American imagination, certainly on TV. ER had fragility of life and on full display in the finale last night. Here's a little clip where a new intern at the ER gets attached to the family of a woman whose twins she just helped birth. She checks in on the mother a few hours later. Here's Dr. Julia Wise, played by Alexis Bledel, in a conversation with the staff at the reception desk.
Excuse me, I'm here to check on a patient.
And you are?
Dr. Wise from the ER. I called, but I got put on hold.
Yeah, we're swamped. A couple of people called in sick. Stomach flu.
We brought a woman up. Inverted uterus, bleeding with an accreta. Her name's Solomonovich.
Dr. Zwirling just went out to find the family.
They're still downstairs. They have a bunch of kids. One of the twins had MEC. Did she have to have the hysterectomy?
No, she went in a DIC. They coded her for over an hour and she died.
And she died. And there you've got it, the medical lingo, life and death in the finale of ER last night. I'm joined now from Waterbury, Connecticut by Lisa Sanders, a practicing internist and a faculty member at the Yale School of Medicine. She is also a technical advisor for the hit Fox TV show House. Her forthcoming book is Every Patient Tells a Story, Medical Mysteries and the Art of Diagnosis. Lisa, Dr. Sanders, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Good, and I caught a little bit of it last night. I can't say I've been a regular watcher. Maybe I watched the pilot 15 years ago, and I saw the lights go out last night. But it did leave me wondering, you know, what is it about these shows, Lisa? You've been intimately involved with them. What is it that has such a long grip, in your view, on American viewers and the imagination in the hospital drama?
Well, first of all, I mean, this is, you know, I think that Brian said it all, that, you know, these are, when you're talking about raising the stakes, it just doesn't get any higher than the issues of life and death. And the hospital encapsulates all of this. But I think that ER played an important role in how we think about the hospital and how we think about medicine. I mean, first of all, just the way they used language. You know, medicine is a language and a culture in addition to being a job.
Mm-hmm.
And in ER, it was the first time I ever remember hearing people just throw around medical terms that there's no way people could possibly know what these terms actually meant, although we came to understand them. But it was like, you know, in Star Trek or those science fiction shows where they throw in the name of some, you know, fabulously strange piece of technology that saves their lives. But, you know, STAT and, you know, all these kinds of tests, MRI, DIC, they just mentioned DIC. You don't know what that
bleeding
is.
Bleeding with an accreta, and kids had mech.
Right. So, but we all understand the meaning, if not the specific meaning. We all understand that, oh, these are bad things. Oh, DIC, that sounds really bad. You don't think, oh, disseminated intravascular coagulopathy. You don't think that, but you don't need to think that. You know, oh, this is bad.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the end of ER and the long grip of the hospital drama on the American imagination. ER, final episode last night, but the chain of hospital dramas go on and on. Susan Sontag wrote in 1978 in her famous essay, Illness as Metaphor, illness is the night side of life, a more onerous citizenship. Everyone who is born holds dual citizenship in the kingdom of the well and in the kingdom of the sick. Although we all prefer to use only the good passport, sooner or later each of us is obliged, at least for a spell, to identify ourselves as citizens of that other place. Illness, and that other place often, in a hospital. 800-423-8255 to look at the metaphor, the fact, the appeal of the hospital illness, the hospital drama on the American imagination. Dr. Lisa Sanders has joined us from Waterbury, Connecticut. She's a practicing internist in Connecticut on the faculty at Yale Medical School, technical advisor for the hit Fox TV show House, which is based, in fact, was on her diagnosis column for the New York Times Magazine. We're joined as well now from New York by Mark Hornstra. He is director of emergency services at St. Francis Hospital, the Heart Center in Roslyn, New York. Dr. Hornstra, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. It's my pleasure.
We're thinking about why viewers are drawn to these, but I'm thinking over the many years of ER and others like it, but let's just take ER. It must have had an effect on doctors themselves and who was drawn to the medical profession and what they wanted to do there, Dr. Hornstra.
Oh, yeah. It made a big difference. The show advanced the cachet and allure of emergency medicine. It portrayed the practitioners as bold and knowledgeable and humane, dropped us on an adrenaline-charged canvas. Applications to residency programs in emergency medicine skyrocketed in the first and second and third season. They've remained high. How could college students resist going to medical school, and how could the medical students resist going into residency programs when they can see the likes of Mark Green and Doug Ross and Carol Hathaway? I mean, that's where you'd want to be. That's
so the allure, the popularity of working in the emergency room actually spiked with the show's popularity.
Oh, absolutely. The residency programs in emergency medicine were able to attract the best and brightest graduates from the best medical schools all over the country.
Lisa Sanders, when you think back on your youth, your decision to get into medicine, Can you trace it back in part? I mean, I know plenty of journalists who look back to All the President's Men. Do you trace yours back to something in TV drama, hospital drama?
Well, no, actually, my interest came from covering it when I was working, when I was a producer at CBS News. I covered medicine for many years, but I remember the day when it crossed my mind that maybe medicine would be a cool thing to do, because the correspondent I was with, Dr. Bob Arnott, we were filming him shooting a stand-up, and he disappeared from the camera, and we were like, where is he? And we looked, the cameraman found him, and he was pulling this elderly woman out of a river. He was doing a stand-up on a boat in a river, and he had seen this woman drift by him, you know, unconscious, and he jumped in, dragged her out of the water, performed CPR, and saved her life. And I thought, huh, you know, I've never actually done that in television, you know, saved anybody's life before. And it planted a seed that it planted a hunger that I didn't actually know I had at the time, which was to touch people in a more intimate way than what television allows.
Let's hear straight from our listeners for a moment. We've got some who have indeed been influenced. William in Boston, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Good to speak with you. I actually started watching ER when I was pre-med and going through medical school, and I would say it had an influence on me as well as many of my classmates. At the time, it was the only show that really depicted medical drama in a very realistic way, whether it was jargon or the culture, the environment. And I would say majority of people in my medical school class end up going to emergency medicine over general surgery and internal medicine, which at the time were typically the more popular residencies to go into.
And what about you, William? Where did you end up?
I ended up doing emergency medicine.
And maybe ER put you there. How much like or unlike is it from the show?
It's actually very realistic. Obviously, there are many components of it that are overly dramatized, but the medical language, the cases are very representative of cases that you would encounter, especially in a busy county hospital where you see the type of trauma as well as cardiac, neurologic, and other cases that you see there.
And let me, I've always wanted to ask, do you and your colleagues, do you think as you're working, doing the real-life work in the emergency room, do you carry around ER in your heads? Do you have a kind of, you know, nimbus, a glow of special drama because you've all seen that drama?
It's funny. In medical school, we used to joke that you know, a lot of things that we learned on the TV show. And obviously this is as you were just starting to learn the terminology, and then you would hear it on the TV show as well. There are many times where, you know, you do feel like you are working in an environment just like the TV show. But, of course, you know, the show is encapsulating just the most dramatic portions of what you do in the emergency department, because there are many times where the emergency department is not quite so so busy or so dramatic. And But obviously, that's the TV show.
William, good luck when the ambulances come in, and thank you for calling. Mark Kunstra, how about it? Do you find that your young doctors come to your emergency room with sort of ER and other, you know, Grey's Anatomy, you name it, images in their head that you have to either, I don't know, you can take advantage of, or you have to unteach? Or?
Well, I think that the ethic that the show portrayed of the physician is knowledgeable and humane. Who approached every problem as, this is my problem. Anything that comes through the door is my bailiwick. It's my responsibility. That kind of an ethic, if a physician doesn't have it, then they don't belong in emergency medicine. It's hard to instill that. Most of the time, people make career decisions based on their strengths and not just on the allure of the show or on the allure of any show.
Sure.
But they ended up with that kind of an ethic and ready to jump in. I think that that the show got a lot of things right about the environment of an emergency department. Most specifically, I think it's the television term is a tight cut, that the physician walks into a room and not knowing what to expect, you see a kid with a little pebble in their ear, and the next room over a middle-aged businessman having a heart attack, and then just the next second to have a psychotic 35-year-old, in the next room over a sore throat, and then someone who's had 6 months of back pain, and you're saying to yourself at 2 in the morning, why are they here after 6 months? And that they really caught, I think that was what certainly attracted me, the sense of You know, I really didn't want to always be sewing in that same old mitral valve over and over again.
Surgery,
the sense
yeah.
That,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Anything that came through the door was mine, was my responsibility. It was a challenge that I think really appeals to physicians who become emergency physicians.
And there's life in the ER. Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Deborah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think, I didn't watch ER a whole lot. I'm a total addict of House because it offers a couple of amazing things. One, that it's a medical whodunit. And the fact that, you know, healthcare today is so tenuous for some people, including myself. I love watching a show about a doctor I pray for. You know, I don't want to go to a doctor with a condition and have him slap the medicine du jour according to his specialty on me and then send me packing. I want to know the cause because, you know, I have a scientific brain, and when I watch House, I pray for a doctor like that. And also, the other aspect of it is that it does create a little bit of paranoia in you because you lie in bed after you've watched, you know, a season of House in one sitting, and you go, oh, my God, my leg is twitching. I must have a parasite from Indonesia.
Right, right. Many possibilities offered on these shows. Deborah, thanks for calling. Lisa, she calls it a what done it, sort of like a who done it. I mean, there is always the element of puzzle and mystery here. That's a fundamental appeal.
Absolutely. And I think House really expands on this really interesting moment. I mean, I think up until House and up until my column, diagnosis was really a one-liner in between the sort of dramatic presentation of the symptoms and the heartwarming resolution of the illness and reuniting of the loved one with their family. So I think it's fascinating that this moment gets expanded because for me, when I went to medical school and when I did my clerkships, which is where medical students are exposed to all these different things, this is what was appealing to me. You know, I hope that House does for internal medicine what ER does for did for emergency medicine. Although I don't know if that's really going to happen. I haven't seen it so far. In any case,
do you see a connection between medicine and detective shows, Lisa?
Absolutely. Somehow. House is, you know, very upfront, based on Sherlock Holmes. You know, I mean, his name is House. He lives at 221B something. He has only one friend. He's addicted to drugs. I mean, there are all these parallels. But really, what he does is very similar to what Sherlock Holmes does. And Sherlock Holmes was, in turn, based on a doctor that the author, Arthur Conan Doyle, had worked with, Joseph Bell, this remarkable doctor in Scotland who had this uncanny ability to see things, not just see details that other people might overlook, but then to collect those details into a story that told him something about this patient. I mean, he was well known for being able to tell something about the patient when the patient walked into his office before the patient even opened his mouth.
Lisa Sanders, a technical advisor to House. Here's a little bit from the pilot episode of the hit Fox show. Dr. Greg House diagnoses a patient who comes to his clinic complaining of back pain. He doesn't realize that is the patient, but his skin is orange. Here's the patient, played by Andrew Ehrlich, explaining his symptoms to Dr. Greg House, played by Hugh Laurie.
I was playing golf and my cleats got stuck. I mean, it hurt a little, but I kept playing. The next morning, I could barely stand up. Well, you're smiling, so I take it that means this isn't serious.
Unfortunately, you have a deeper problem. Your wife is having an affair.
What?
You're orange, you moron. It's one thing for you not to notice, but if your wife hasn't picked up on the fact that her husband has changed colors, she's just not paying attention. By the way, do you consume just a ridiculous amount of carrots and megadose vitamins? Carrots turn you yellow, then niacin turns you red. Find some finger paint and do the math. And get a good lawyer.
Dr. Lisa Sanders, you're orange, you moron? Is that really what patients should expect or doctors should deliver?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, I always get a kick out of it when patients say to me, oh, I wish my doctor, I wish I could go to Dr. House. Because this is the way he treats many patients. And, you know, not that would definitely get you drummed out of the core in most residency programs. I mean, that's really unprofessional. And yet,
yeah.
I think that his remarkable ability to see things and put them together allows people to overlook the fact that his bedside manner is wanting. You know, he looked at this guy, saw him twiddling his wedding ring, saw him, you know, going off on something, you know, that was not very serious, and House, like, nailed him. He said, you've got way bigger problems than this.
Bedside manner, missing in action. Dr. Hernstra, this is unfair. You work in the emergency room, but I know you were quite a fan of ER, not such a fan of House. Of course, Lisa Sanders works on it and advises on it, but here you are, a doctor, watching out at this whole span of hospital dramas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not to put too sharp a point on it, but I hate House.
Okay.
I think the medical community, I think physicians themselves have kind of a mixed feeling. There's a real dichotomy. On the one hand, there's a small part of me that wants to say to someone I'm taking care of that's having their third heart attack and their second amputation and still smoking three packs a day, there's a part of me that wants to say, you moron, why haven't you quit smoking?
Sure.
But that's a rare occurrence. I like my patients. I want to make them feel better. I wish that I were the brilliant diagnostician that House is, and I think every physician would like to make obscure diagnoses that might be in a footnote on one page in Harrison's textbook of tropical medicine. But on the other hand, what we see every day is stuff that occasionally we can cure, but more commonly we can make people feel better, and that's by touching them and listening to them and feeling them. That's an important part for me of medical care, and it's an important part of emergency medicine.
And, of course, Americans watching that, some of them get that kind of care. Many do not. And maybe a vicarious thrill when it is warm and supportive of seeing it, at least on TV. Let's get a call from Cranston, Rhode Island. Ryan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a comment about something that was said earlier. I think what makes these dramas so engaging is that, like you all said, the medical community, it seems to be a culture in itself, and it's this very fascinating culture to someone on the outside. It's filled with people that understand the intricacies of the human body and perhaps even life itself. And while I may not be a doctor, but I will offer my second opinion and say I like House. But I like the show because it uses that. That culture, and it uses those fascinating aspects. But I think what makes it so successful is that it adds something different, just like all these other shows add something different. And with House, it has this character that is brilliant in this culture, or seemingly brilliant in this culture, yet the last person he's able to take care of is himself.
Ryan, let us pick it up. Lisa Sanders, how about it? What's more important here, the medicine or the culture, the social interaction, I guess when it comes to the theater anyway?
Well, I think they're both extremely important, but if you ask me, I would say the medicine is the most important. But if you ask any of the writers or the producers or anybody closely involved with House more closely than I am, they will tell you that the drama is most important. And many times I have said, wait, there are three technical advisors, and we all have the same story of, you know, you say, well, this isn't actually right. And the writer will go, yeah, but it works better my way. And, you know, I can't really say anything about that. I make my strongest and best case for accuracy, and they make their choices based on their own intuition about what works best in this very bizarre format of a television drama.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the end of ER and the long grip of the hospital drama on the American imagination. Dr. Lisa Sanders is with us, technical advisor for House, a practicing internist in Connecticut on the faculty at Yale Medical School. Dr. Mark Hornstra is here, director of the ER Emergency Services at St. Francis Hospital, the Heart Center in Roslyn, New York. Of course, it goes way back. Here's a clip from a 1965 episode of the then-popular NBC drama, Dr. Kildare. Dr. Kildare questions the decision of an esteemed visiting surgeon to operate on a 74-year-old woman with a weak heart. Here, Kildare, played by Richard Chamberlain, is in an argument with Dr. Becker, played by James Mason.
I say there was another course of action we could have taken with that patient. Granted, she was down to the short end of things. But there was still one thing left we could have done for her, given to her, Dr. Becker. And we had it to give.
With your pills and your tubes, no doubt.
Exactly, sir, with my pills and my tubes. A little strength. Very temporary, of course. I believe I could have given her enough strength at least to last out those last 4 weeks of her life. And without the pain and without the suffering of those last 10 days.
Lisa Sanders, it's almost Shakespearean delivery compared to the sort of rough and tumble, you know, cinema verite that we've got out there now in Dr. Kildare.
Absolutely. You know, I think that Dr. Kildare and ER and House, they all say something about medicine at the point of time where they started. You know, ER started when medicine was beginning to fall apart. I mean, right after the Clintons had tried to change health care and that had fallen apart, and where there was this growing need for emergency medicine as regular doctors, since regular doctors were getting hard to get to. And I think House's popularity comes from a particular moment in time. One of the callers expressed some concern about, you know, whether the medicine that they were getting from their doctor was just because, you know, maybe the doctor was on the payroll of some pharmaceutical company. So there's a lot of distrust about where doctors' information and opinions are coming from. I think there's a sense that doctors are shift workers and there's no driving single doctor who's in charge of thinking through their care. And I think House is reassuring in that setting.
Lisa, you've talked about how modern medicine and television essentially came on the scene around the same time. They sort of grew up together.
Absolutely. You know, when medicine, you know, everything we have that lets us make a diagnosis other than a history, or at least prove a diagnosis, came at the middle of the last century. You know, we didn't even have penicillin until after World War II, or at least not in any widespread way. We didn't have a CT scanner until like the 80s, an MRI until the 90s. These are the tools that we use on a daily basis, even in ER, certainly in House. They didn't even exist. And as they came to exist, and our ability to understand diseases and think about diseases and talk about diseases matured, so was television. And, you know, medicine is this incredibly visual art as well, as is television. So I think the two of them, those two sciences sort of, or arts, grew together at least in a certain time period. You know, medicine has this long history going back to Hippocrates, and I respect that. But medicine as we see it now did not really exist until the middle of the last century.
Grew up with television and very often on television. Let's go to Louisa, Virginia, and Sandra. Hi, Sandra. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love On Point, and really excited to get to chat with everyone.
Great to have you.
Actually, what was just offered is a perfect segue. I had noticed as a part of our changing culture with medicine that the role that ER was playing as an educational tool, and, you know, even coming on after the show and talking about, you know, the medical things that were talked about on the show, and it seemed to come at the same time that there was a rise in the Internet and healthcare on the Internet and people being more informed about their health conditions and wanting to be more informed. And I was interested in the comments of the folks there. And
do you work in medicine, Sandra, may I ask?
Yes, I do. I work at the University of Virginia as a healthcare researcher and health educator, so maybe that's why I noticed that aspect of the program.
And did you think it was good education in general, what a person might get watching ER?
I mean, I do think that raising people's awareness of things is a wonderful thing, and to get people really willing to sort of take ownership, and I think it is a part of a change in culture of how patients come in. Now, I'm not a physician, so you know, I don't know the impact of it from that standpoint when your patients are coming in, you know, knowing as much off of Google and ER and whatever, or maybe knowing the wrong things. But from a standpoint of getting people educated and at least beginning to think about things, I think it's great.
Sandra, thanks very much. Dr. Hunster, how about it? We saw, I think, on ER, you know, new procedures, they'd come off the line and 2 weeks later they'd be on ER being played with in drama.
Well, that was a wonderful service that that the show performed. I think that in terms of education, it was dramatically important in raising the level of sophistication of people presenting in emergency departments. Within months of the use of hypothermia, for example, after cardiac arrest to help people neurologically recover, they were having shows about it. They were having treating strokes with clot busting drugs right out of the door, right after the studies came out that this was probably good medical care. That was right on the show. People would come in and say, "Well, aren't you going to use this drug? Aren't you going to use this treatment on my mother, on my grandfather?" And you needed to be prepared to answer that question. You needed to be able to say, "Well, your grandmother is appropriate for this, and yes, we're going to do that." Or you'd have to say, "No, there's a window of opportunity, and we've missed that." That was an important service that the show performed.
You know, you talked about how interest in the ER surged after the show came on. Give us a little sense of the history there on the medical side. If you go back 30, 40 years, was it the best and brightest going to the ER, or who was staffing ERs around the country?
Well, we're talking about the evolution of medical care, and nowhere has there been the kind of transformation that there's been in emergency medicine. In the 70s, ambulances were funeral hearses with the curtains removed. They'd transport your loved one to the hospital with a little red light on top with the curtains down, and if things didn't go well, they'd put the curtains back in and take them away. Emergency departments at that point were staffed with moonlighting physicians who were trying to build a practice, dermatologists, ophthalmologists who were working nights. That would be fine if you came to the emergency department with a scratch of your cornea or with a rash. Mm. But if you came with abdominal pain or chest pain, then you were plumb out of luck. So by 1980s, it was possible to do residencies in emergency medicine and train specifically to be able to take care of what came through the door.
And you're saying that the television camera being turned on that venue in a drama actually contributed to that?
You know, the transformation in emergency medicine was before that. I think the show started in 1994, and it was a decade before that it was possible to train in emergency medicine and become board certified, just like a board certified pediatrician or a gynecologist. But they grew up together. The show helped educate the public as to what they could expect in an emergency department, and it was no longer acceptable to have your wife's abdominal pain evaluated by a dermatologist or an orthopedic surgeon. People began to expect better comprehensive care.
Of course, ER and any show has to take liberties as well, I am sure. Let's get a call from Raleigh, North Carolina, and Dustin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Personally, I don't really enjoy the medical dramas. I do, however, enjoy Scrubs, and the funny thing is, despite it being a sitcom, I actually think the dynamics between the characters are more realistic on that show.
Are you in medicine, Dustin, may I ask?
Yes, I am. I'm a recent graduate from medical school, residency in surgery.
And you go for Scrubs. That is, you go for laughs, not all the medical lingo? What?
Well, that's part of it. I do enjoy the show generally, but like I said, I think the dynamics between the characters are much more realistic, the types of people. But the point that I wanted to make about the dramas, about the realism, is I think that the producers often miss a golden opportunity to really educate the public. And I think the point that your guests are making, that other callers made too about this, is that patients do have expectations, and it is good for them to learn about other procedures. But I think the problem is then in the outcomes that they see on the show. And I think that patients then come to their physicians with expectations that aren't necessarily correct.
You mean expectations that are too high? Within the space of an hour, you can turn somebody around and everything's fine and off they go?
Yes. And the fact that a lot of people aren't fine. You know, I think CPR is a really good example. A lot of times when you see on TV people performing CPR, the patients end up doing very well. But the truth is, most patients that go into cardiopulmonary arrest CPR is their best chance at surviving, but it's not very effective.
Interesting. Thanks for calling, Dustin. Dr. Hornstraw, some fundamental, misapprehensions that may have grown out of this time? CPR a little bit too promising if you grew up on ER?
Yeah, well, they've shown actually, I think, a reviewer looked at the number of successful resuscitations on television from cardiac arrest versus the real thing, and there's a huge discrepancy. Something like 60% of CPR ends in success on television, whereas in real life it's much smaller than that. There is a difference, of course. In hospital cardiac arrest, they do much better. 30-40% survive. So the crisis of expectation is certainly an issue. But I don't think that generally it's a problem giving people hope. It's easy enough to dash people's hope in the emergency department. Mm-hmm. So I think if people arrive with expectations that things will go well, I think that's better for all of us.
But Lisa Sanders, of course, people do come with expectations maybe much stronger and clearer than they might otherwise because of all the TV they've watched about the setting.
Well, I think that people do think that that we know much more than we actually do. I think that it's very underappreciated how young our knowledge of the human body and how it works and doesn't work. I don't think people really appreciate how new that data is and how much we don't know. But I think that, you know, television shows, including ER, do show consequences of treatment, certainly in-house. There's no episode in-house where some test or medication does not cause some sort of hideous, terrible consequence, mm-hmm. you know, terrible symptoms, horrible side effects. And so I think that I think that people have much more complicated expectations about what doctors and medicine can do than they had previously. I do think people expect overall they will get diagnosed and cured, but we all hope that. But I think that there's at least a beginning of an understanding that these are complicated things. Just the way it takes an entire show for a group of doctors to diagnose a single patient, something that drives my internal medicine colleagues absolutely wild.
Now, why is that?
Well, because, you know, it looks like House and his three or four minions take care of patients one at a time, that they only have one patient in the hospital at a time.
Right.
But, of course, you know, when I attend on the wards, I take care of 12, 15, 16 patients at a time. And, you know, I like to give them all very thoughtful care, but I do have, you know, 10 other patients.
Yeah, you would wish you had one or two, but that's not the reality. Let's get a call right here from Jane in Boston. Jane, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi,
Tom. I just wanted to say that I've been a big ER fan. I remember when my son was three. I'm a clinician. I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. I'm a wife. And I think the thing about, especially ER for me, is that they were able to show sort of some of the trouble that clinicians have in making the right decisions. And it was really good at showing vulnerability and even some of the brokenness of, you know, individuals and how their lives weren't great, but every day they went in there and they did the best they could, but they weren't perfect. And there was something I think that really pulled at the heartstrings. I always, always respected the clinical excellence which they were able to portray. But I also think that there was that vulnerability that just really captivated people when you saw these characters.
On the patient's part and on the medical professionals, and no question, that's the powerful little engine driving these dramas. Dr. Hornstraw, does it change the way when patients come in, they look at you and your staff? Are they trying to, you know, read your eyes and body language for drama or, you know, what just went on in the glove closet or...
I think patients come to the emergency department. They're in pain. They're hurting. They're scared. I think that one of the lessons certainly I've learned is that being reassuring and being kind and actually caring, touching people, is the prelude, is the beginning of a diagnostic process that hopefully gets the patients feeling better and back home. But I think that making that human connection is the first step.
And Lisa, what about all the drama on the dramas? You know, do medical professionals pick up on that? Has it turned ERs and hospitals into, you know, soap opera environments?
Well, I mean, I think that there's not nearly as much pleasurable sex going on in the hospital, in real hospitals, as there was on Scrubs and other dramas. But I think the drama has always been there. I think that one of the reasons that these hospital shows and medical dramas are effective is that there is a lot of drama. There's personal drama. Whenever you get people with adrenaline flowing in a small confined space trying to get something done, you have a cohesion, but there's also conflicts. I mean, there are different ideas about the way things should work. There are interpersonal conflicts because we're, after all, human. And I think the image of the wounded healer, which was a theme that surfaced several times over the course of ER, mm-hmm. and of course is the dominant image in House, is an important one. I think that doctors are probably the largest group of working individuals who also has the highest rate of drug addiction of any employed group of individuals in the country. So I think that there are human elements that can't be eliminated from medicine, and the good medical dramas pick up on that and reveal that because it's an important component of it.
Insight in these dramas on medicine and on humanity. Lisa Sanders, technical advisor to House on the faculty at Yale Medical School. Dr. Sanders, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks so much, Tom.
And Dr. Mark Hornstraw, director of emergency services at St. Francis Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Hornstraw.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. You can continue the conversation at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.